the Conqueror. Bob the Absolute. Bob the Infallible. Bob the Keeper of Pet Roosters. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. This is Primetime Sports. Coast to coast on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. As a result of the tragic events in our nation's capital today, the Toronto Maple Leaf-Ottawa Senator hockey game, of course, was postponed earlier today. The Toronto Maple Leafs apparently have now landed in Toronto. They've returned to Toronto. The game will be rescheduled later. Coley Campbell will join us a little bit later on. He was designated by the NHL to handle the situation in Ottawa and make a determination as to whether the game would or would not be played. So Coley will join us later, and we'll go through the proceedings that they undertook from mid-morning today until early afternoon when they made the decision not to play the game tonight.
It's always a tricky one. You know, this is not, there are no comparables, but it is a tricky decision for leagues. You know, I think there were some practical considerations tonight as well in terms of Ottawa and policing at the arena. But, they're making the right call, whether it is this or 9/11 or after the Kennedy assassination. You know, leagues have kind of struggled with that decision about, should the show go on?
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's a right and wrong answer. Although, famously, Pete Rozelle said the one regret of his tenure as commissioner of the NFL was that they played after the Kennedy assassination.
Right. And I would agree that that was the wrong decision.
Yeah.
I think this was the right one, and I think it's always the right one to say, no, we're not going to do this, not right now.
But it's funny.
You look too, Stephen. We are still in the midst of a major investigation.
I know, yeah.
There are still people inside the Parliament buildings, last I heard, that can't get out of there and get home.
But, I was talking to Craig Forrest downstairs today, who was playing soccer in England during the 80s when there were IRA bombings, quite frequently, and some of them which, cost many lives. And the attitude there was, screw it. They're not going to make us stop. We're going to keep going.
There's something to that, too.
There is another approach to it. Again, I'm not saying which is right and which is wrong, but it has been played a different way.
Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe joins us now. Mr. Ryan, I wanted to go down a couple of different tracks. We want to address the World Series. Steven's got a couple topics he wants to throw at you. But one of the things we got into earlier today, I'm intrigued by your perspective on this, is the prospect of the National Football League's return to Los Angeles. I had been told that the NFL's mandate right now is to put not one but two teams into L.A. Today, the San Diego Chargers ownership says they don't want any teams in Los Angeles, saying that it would seriously and adversely affect their ability to generate revenue, generate a fan base, citing that 25 to 30% of their fans right now come from the greater Los Angeles area. What do you think the future of the NFL in Los Angeles actually is?
This has been fascinating because in the last several years, you've become aware of the fact that a lot of people who are sports fans in L.A. are happy with the status quo. They can watch all the games that they want. They don't seem to feel some psychic need to have a football team to root for, that they've had their football interests satisfied in this other manner, and that the local franchise is USC. It's out there. That feeling is out there. I've heard it repeatedly. I found that interesting, and I couldn't challenge it because I don't live there. As far as the Chargers are concerned, obviously there have been teams in L.A. since 1946, and they predated the Chargers, and they coincided with both the Rams and the Raiders. I don't remember this being an issue, but I do know it's a very difficult market. They have no they're hemmed in by the ocean on the west, by the mountains and the desert on the east, by Orange County on the north, and by Mexico in the south. And I know that there is an issue, and maybe they built up a fan base from L.A. that they didn't have before, and they don't want to lose it, much like the Orioles, who had adopted Washington, D.C.,
right,
and then co-opted it before the Nats came into being. I would think there's your best analogy. And Peter Angelos, of course, the owner of the Orioles, fought bitterly the Nats to engage in this amazing ongoing television controversy over the with the network there, and he has been unhappy from the moment that the Nats have come into being. So I don't know if there's an analogy or not.
But boy, Bob, there's a vast amount of territory from the southern edge of Orange County to the northern edge of Greater Los Angeles. There's a lot of people in there.
It's about a two-hour drive, two and a half. That's it.
Without traffic,
I mean, I've made it quite a few times. Okay, traffic has gotten worse, but I mean, it's a distinct market. There is no question.
Yeah.
They've got people coming from L.A. That's not the way it used to be. But those are the football fans. I would imagine from the southern part of that area, rather than up in the valley or out in the east. I don't know. I'm guessing. Interesting though. And I'm not shocked to hear that they would object to the two teams from none. I find that fascinating.
And yes, that's what I'm being told, is that there are two franchises.
Wow.
The NFL wants two franchises in Los Angeles, and at least in part to share a single stadium, which of course happens in Greater New York, New Jersey, technically. But the Jets and the Giants, of course, share a stadium, and they do so rather successfully. And you can understand the economic benefits of doing so.
Yes.
And the two franchises that are most often talked about as being candidates to move into Los Angeles, assuming we are talking about moving franchises and not expansion, are, interestingly, the San Diego Chargers and the St. Louis Rams. And what is interesting about both of them is both franchises were in Los Angeles.
That's correct. The original L.A. Chargers were Baron Hilton, and they were L.A. before they moved to San Diego. That's how people forget that. But
yes,
you're so right. And, of course, we know the saga of the Rams.
Brian Cooper is our sports business analyst, was in here earlier, and he was arguing the point that he believes there's no way they will allow existing franchises to move into the L.A. area, because the ability to generate revenue from expansion in L.A. would be too enticing to the NFL. I guess my point is, even if you charged an outrageous amount, let's say you charged $1.5 billion for a franchise in L.A., you got two of them, there's $3 billion. That's a lot of money. But in the big picture of the NFL, maybe not all that much.
Yeah, all the economics of it go over my head. I just find it, obviously, it's anybody staring at it from the outside saying that that market does not have a team in the most popular sport in America. How can that be? Where is the public outcry? And, of course, we know the stadium, it all stems from the stadium issue. The Coliseum's unsuitable. They don't have another stadium. And that's that. And there have been all these discussions about getting a stadium and who's going to build it and blah, 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 and city, county, private, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, as often happens. It is interesting, though, to think about the idea that we've come to take for granted that this phenomenal market does not have a team.
Well, and I don't, Bob, have a sense. And I certainly was around when the Rams, covering the team when the Rams left, the Raiders were in and out, and they were never really Los Angeles team. The city really ever embraced them. But it's not like, there are cities that lose professional sports franchises where it's like they've cut the heart out of the city and people never get over it and they're just begging for a team to come back. But it's not like that with football in Los Angeles. I don't sense that.
It's 2 decades.
Yeah, it's a long time. And B, even when it was happening, I don't think people were weeping on the streets about losing the NFL.
You're so right. I mean, I guess that's just the way they are. It's funny because the Rams, have such a storied history. The L.A. Rams were a romantic franchise, came into being in 1946, came out of Cleveland, and were the first outpost of professional big-time sports, major league sports, on the West Coast.
That's
the Rams,
right.
The 49ers. And I mean, in the 50s, they were before baseball moved, before hockey existed, before basketball, the Lakers and the Warriors. It was a great romanticism attached to the Lakers. I mean, to the Rams with those helmets and Elroy Crazy Lake Hurst and Bob Waterfield and Tom Fears and all that stuff. That was a very romantic franchise in the 50s.
Do you believe that football in Los Angeles, one team or two, ultimately will, I was going to say be successful, but be successful sort of understates what I'm trying to get at. Can a market like Los Angeles, with a football team in it, in this modern era of economics, parallel what the Dallas Cowboys do, what the New York Giants do in terms of economics, do you think?
Well, in theory, theory. I don't know. I'm not an economist. I'm not a sports economist. I think the issue here is LA a singular market, as we just heard? Are they a singular market that simply doesn't share the nation's passionate embrace of football? Pro football enough to want their own team, or are they kind of happy to have fantasy teams, happy to have the games that they get, don't need this, and to make them almost unique among all major markets. The Lakers own the town, or they have. They're not going to own it much longer with the team they got. The Dodgers have had their moments, and the Lakers have overtaken them. Now the Dodgers are spending a tremendous amount of money to get the thing back. And the Kings are the champions. And hockey is growing in interest. Football, maybe they're just different. Could it be that there's an enclave in America where football just doesn't have the hold on that has everywhere else? Maybe. Maybe it's just that simple.
I want to ask you about something. We haven't talked about it a lot this week, but, you know, it's the Percy Harvin story, which to me is an extraordinary story. Just because, you know, the defending Super Bowl champions, a team that most people were ready to concede a berth in the coming Super Bowl, at least in the first week of the season, in the middle of the year, trade away their best offensive player, you know, Russell Wilson maybe, but, you know, arguably their greatest offensive weapon, you know, in a kind of a straight-up football trade, but, you know, I guess addition by subtraction in the case of getting rid of Harvin. And it's not going to make them better in the short term. They are challenged a little bit offensively right now, and it's all because, you know, I guess he's a bad guy and some or a disruptive guy. But I can't remember a player, you know, just in Bob, in recent times anyway, a guy of this caliber being traded in the middle of a football season by a team that, you know, is kind of struggling to get back to where it was.
There is no precedent. This is absolutely unprecedented. Off-season, sure, Randy Moss, Exhibit A, fourth round pick.
Yep.
When he came here. But not during. He must be extraordinarily disruptive. And, of course, now we're going to hear all the good stuff. We're going to put a smiling face on it now in New York. And they are desperate, the Jets. So this is an incredibly desperate move in terms of the personnel thing. From the financial standpoint, from what I read, if it doesn't work out and they have to let him and they want to let him go, it's not going to kill them. They're not going to it's cost-effective for them to take this big chance to get – back and get respectable and get an offense. But no, your question is, this is really weird, I got to tell you. This is really something.
It is, and you know, it kind of gets into that whole territory of, you know, like, this is a guy, apparently Harvin had a fist fight with Golden Tate before the Super Bowl, right? So he was a disruptive figure on a team that then went and won the Super Bowl, and Harvin was a big part of that game for them. So they, you know, it's not like they just woke up and found out he was a bad guy, but it's also like they didn't just wake up and find out, boy, he's a great football player. The notion of, you know, that balance between great athletic talents and bad guys, right? Like, and again, I don't know, you know, I'm not going to take as gospel everything that's been said about Percy Harvin in the last week, but, you know, there must have been a lot of things they didn't like about him that had nothing to do with him being on the field. And I, you know, God, the franchise that's close to you has, I believe, tread that fine line a few times with people.
The other thing is that they've got a happy-go-lucky coach.
Yeah.
They got a coach that rolls with the punch. A coach whose prior incarnation failed because he was so much of a player's guy that he could, it wasn't successful. I mean, he's as player-friendly a coach. He's going to another one, though. Rex is a player-friendly coach, that's for sure. But there's nobody like, you know, Pete Carroll that I know of and that didn't work there. It is fascinating. It's going to certainly bear watching.
Well, you know, I've always taken the whole, you know, the whole dressing room, locker room harmony thing with a bit of a, you know, grain of salt. Like, I always figured if you're a professional athlete and the guy four lockers away is a complete jerk, but he can help you win, you're probably willing, unless he's, you know, a sociopath, you're probably going to tolerate him because he can score touchdowns and or hit home runs or, you know, do whatever, right? Most of the time that's going to be true in any workplace where, you know, there's a big collective reward if you win, so... Yeah, we hate his guts, but we'll tolerate him. That to me is the norm, and this is the exception.
I give you Albert Bell.
Yeah,
and the worst, most negative force in the locker room that I've encountered in the last 30 years, and yet they won. They didn't win at all, and it wasn't his fault that they didn't win at all. But they lived with him and allowed him to dominate a locker room. I don't think it's exactly the same thing with. As I know, he wasn't having fights with teammates. He was glowering and intimidating toward the media, that's for sure. And then the players don't mind that. That was okay. Anyway, there's a lot of possible comparisons, but nothing that would result in what we have described here, which is a trade in the middle of a season of such a person from, you know, of such stature and such skill. No, no. Off-season, things are done in the off-season.
With Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, let's turn to the World Series real quickly. Some time ago, last week, the week before that, in this long analysis of the Kansas City Royals, that we're still dissecting this franchise and trying to figure out how'd they do this, are they doing this, can they sustain it? I took a look back and said, there's the 2007 Colorado Rockies, who did much of what this Kansas City Royals team has done this year. And when they got to the World Series, unfortunately for them, imploded and wound up being swept in four straight by, let me think. That would be the Red Sox.
Some team in the upper northeast quadrant of the United States, yes.
Beckett, Schilling, Matsuzaka, and Lester were the winning pitchers in those four games as they really blew out the Colorado Rockies. Are we seeing, in your opinion, a parallel here with Kansas City?
I hesitate to draw any, obviously, major conclusions based on one game, given that the starting pitcher for them just did not pitch well. And they were up against a guy who was establishing a reputation as a superior postseason pitcher. One game, 7-1, okay. I picked the Giants on the basis of, to me, a gut feeling that it would end for the Royals. They had taken it far enough. It was an interesting battle because rather than an irresistible force against an immovable object, the analogy we love to draw so often, or metaphor, it's an irresistible force against irresistible force. All that said, let's see more. I think it's way too easy to assume that this is the beginning. This is dire. We could be looking back and seeing it was just a baseball game, and they didn't have it that night, and they could be going up 2-1 or 3-1. But I just was rooting personally for baseball to have a seven-game series and at least a competitive, exciting six, because I don't like the idea that we played so few games in the postseason. I think the fewest since we've gone to three tiers in the playoffs.
Right.
And it cut off interest. But although they were themselves provided some. I mean, let's just not overreact here now, because Baumgartner is so stifling, and I kind of, you know, the matchups now aren't too, the second matchup isn't too bad for them. Well, so we'll see. I picked the Giants, but not by a whole lot. So we'll see.
I just kind of wonder, you know, and again, it's the games played between the white lines, but you know, the long layoff after the undefeated run followed by a real beatdown in front of your home fans, you know, there's got to be a bit of an emotional thing there where you go, oh, man, it feels bad on a bunch of different levels, and it's got to kind of, you know, a little bit of the magic dust has got to go with something like that, I think.
There was reporting, I read an excellent story, but it's always an excellent story. It's redundant, by Jason Stark on ESPN.com here, and he he said, was the series decided in the first inning of the first game? The Hunter Pence home run.
Yep.
And right after Posey's out of the plate, which could be a momentum changer if they get out of that inning, and actually, though they would have gone, they only give up one run, we're fine. And suddenly it's three, and they're up against Baumgartner. And the crowd, I guess I was busy myself up to the moment of the first pitch. I actually missed the first pitch. I came into it in the second pitch. I take it the atmosphere, from what I've read, was as absolutely electric and just rah-rah as baseball can be before that game. And they were diffused immediately. And I don't know how long-lasting that'll be.
Well, I would say there are two. I think that's part A. I think there was a part B to that, and that's the bottom of the third inning. And Baumgartner gets in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets second and third with nobody out. And I think Kansas City is back in this game, and the fans are right back into this thing. And they see, here we come. Look at us. And the Giants get out of it unscathed.
Yes, right. That was big. That was real big. And so there you go. Well, that's great, you know, baseball circumstance. Yes, you're right. It's a very easy leap to think that this is catastrophic for the Royals. But given that what they've done and how we've seen them do such things as come from 7-3 down to Leicester and win that game to get this whole thing started in the first place, I'm not going to bail yet. But I certainly can understand the thought process.
Mr. Ryan, anything else from you, Mr. Brunt? Mr. Ryan, thank you as always for your time. And enjoy the ball game tonight. I assume you'll be in front of the TV.
I will be. I have a little engagement, and then I'm going to be. But fortunately, it will free me up just in time.
Excellent.
Well planned.
Talk to you next week. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Our producer is giving me signals, and I don't understand what he wants. Was that a break? Yes, I'm going to break. Thank you very much. I didn't know I had to ask him about that. I just kind of would do it.
I think it was break with a little question mark attached.
Oh, was there a question mark? Oh, okay. When we come back, Coley Campbell will join us, and we'll discuss the events of today that led to the decision to postpone the hockey game between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Ottawa Senators in Kanata. We'll address that issue when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.